Accession number 30342, wheel 14.
He was there. I saw the gun out. He's gone. Well, with the top of the drink. And he says, you'll come with me. I thought, go on, I says, take it. I says, I'm not going to go through all this war and be a prisoner. And finally getting, I said, go and get myself shot now. I says, away you go. That was the end of the story with her.
And she went off with him.
He must have went off with her, that I don't know. But I thought, no. Nobody gets killed by a German after having been through what happened to him.
Were you worried about that as a group of prisoners? Because obviously you're in this little camp. You're not getting any news, but gradually you must have filtered through that the war was gone. Were people worried about the fact that it would be like between these two pincers and probably, you know, what I'm trying to get at was, were people making plans, what we're going to do when the war comes to us, you know, when the Americans turn up? What were people thinking? What were the plans that they were?
I don't know.
Because obviously, you read about, you know, particularly when the Russians coming from the east, prisoners getting up and trying to welcome the Russians and getting shot, you know, by being mistaken. Were people aware of things?
Well, it could have happened very easily. I just explained it about that German, the Russian men would have shot me because like that. Because I know he's around shooting the 70s and all that. I was shooting nothing.
So when you were on the road with the Russian with the German guards, could you just describe how you first met the Americans, where they were, what their positions were, how you first ran into them?
Well, you see on the TV, different thinking. You see, it seems like people walking one way and see the people walking this way, you know, refugees, I wouldn't call them, things like that, you know. We just sort of gradually mingled, and so the Russians, the Germans, the Americans, and that, you know. And of course, what's the name, English and all that, you know.
So they were on a road when you were...
We come across them and we fit them, but they come for somehow, I don't really know how exactly how it come.
So who was on the road? I mean, you're on the road...
Walking towards Americans, because we knew the Americans was there. We knew the Russians here, so we were walking towards Americans.
So was the road actually physically packed with people?
People walking this way, people walking that way, and we were talking about phone by nobody. And the point is, we weren't all wearing British uniform because all I was wore was a shirt, no better than this, and a pair of slacks and that, you know. I wasn't dressed as a soldier or something.
So what happened to your battle dress? That had all worn out by then?
Must have been. And I had put a pair of shoes on, that's what you had covered, and I had put really thick soles on, because I didn't know how long I was going to walk and march for. And that was really bad on me if you're trying to walk with them on. And I met these Yanks. Like I said, I got some good grub and things like that, but we were a bit timid about them. And we're all trigger happy, quite a lot of them trigger happy.
So you didn't encounter the Russian army?
No, I didn't come across them at all. Some of the lads apparently did. And instead of getting finished with the war, we're keeping the lads that could drive trucks, and we're making the British lads drive the trucks for the Russians because they went up the way to drive and things like that. They weren't dedicated enough to that. So I said, oh, thank goodness we went the right way.
Do you know where this camp was, this American camp? What town was that?
No, I don't. I know then we got taken jumped the gun bit on the airplanes.
So how long, about in terms of dates, do you remember around about the time that you left the German camp and went on the road, about what time was the war still on at this period?
Yeah, it was a tail end, but we're still on.
So what would it be? Would it be April, March, April, May? What kind of...
Anybody could see it right on the wall.
So it would have probably been April, do you think?
Yeah, whatever. We could see it right on the wall. We knew that was there.
Can you remember where you were when the news of Hitler's death came through? The news that Hitler had died. Was dead.
No, I don't remember that at all, do I?
Yeah. What about VE Day? Do you remember where you were when that happened?
I think I told the story when we chat before. When I got the Blanca Safama, in the belly of Baba, and flew from Germany to Lyons or something, it's called a Lyons, is it called?
France.
Yeah. And we're going to fly straight to England. And I was trying to get this aircraft, And this is a small boat a day, and I started belly aching, short and hard and all that, because so I thought, well, I'm going to stop on the airstrip, stay there all night, and get away first thing in the morning. And the plane I was playing out of, because I couldn't get on, finding that crash and killer all that was on that plane.
And that was on VE Day?
I don't know what, I don't know, say, probably what, I don't remember. Yeah. It crashed, went, flying from Germany to France, I would try to get from France to England, and I couldn't get on the plane, I played hell because I couldn't get on it, and that plane crashed and killed everybody. And when I got on the plane, this Geordie lad said to me, he come from Jarrow, I think, he says, oh, you're a Geordie, he says, come on, he says, I'll put you in where the blood gun I was, you know, and you could see England was arriving. And of course, all I had on my shirt and his slacks, and all the perspex glass was taken down, and I flew across the town. That was a very, very pleasant day, kind of way. Very, very cold indeed. It took me forever to get thawed out when I landed there in England. And all the cigarettes that we had, all that smoke got rid of, English people said, 10 players. And of course, when they went to the Americans, they'll give you 200. We were 10 players.
About how long were you liberated with the Americans before you flew home? About how long were you with them for?
Only about 2 or 3 days, I suppose. I can't think much more because I got involved with that chat with that girl, and I thought I'd get rid of her and all that, you know. And,
how many times did you get out of the camp with your fake armband?
Probably 3 nights, I suppose. Talking about that, just to be afraid all that.
What did the Americans, did the Americans kind of process the prisoners? Did they interrogate
you? Well, they said to me, were you a GI or a, you know, well, I didn't know what a GI was. If I'd fell in, I could have got a lot more food and a lot more stuff from the Yankees. If I'd been a GI, well, I'd say, yeah, I'm a GI, but I didn't know what GI meant. And so consequently, I slipped up there.
What did they interrogate you about?
I was handing stuff out, but they had been a GI and they got this and you got that. We got a fair bit, but nothing compared to what the law men got. But could that be the prisoner? The Americans got took prisoner and come near us in this working camp. And they had nothing at all. And they asked us, have we got any clothes against the Americans? Well, a lot of us had 2 shirts. And things like that by then had been, you know. So he'd give a shirt and a pair of pants or whatever he could afford to give the poor Americans all that. And they were putting 2 shirts on and 2 pairs of pants on. And they were just, you know, no idea at all, like, you know. And of course, they probably realised that they've got to look after them a bit better than that because they had the clue how to behave. And that, you know. Of course, you learn through experience.
Did you ever work with any Americans?
No, I did not, no.
Were any incidents that you can remember, you know, with the bombing raids, any planes getting shot down near where you were, anything like that?
No. The bombing raids, like I said, this place where they had to walk and the people were going to lynch us, as it were. Like. And there was a wagon there that had taken on fire, and when we went there was some grub on there, and we ate this meat, and Peter was saying that it was somebody's body that might be eating. It had been burnt and roasted and that. But it wasn't, I don't know.
Just going back to your prison time, in prison camp time in Germany, the news of the D-Day, how did that filter through to you? You know, the invasion. Did you hear about that, and how did that affect people's morale? And,
well, I can't recall D-Day, really. Don't know where I was in this country. No, I wouldn't have been this country.
No, well, you were in Germany. I mean, this is 1944.
Yeah, I must have been. I can't recall it. Yeah, I know where he's basically showed Heel Hitler, where he showed Heel Churchill and things like that. You know. But you have to be very careful. It must have been there when that was on.
And what about the plot against Hitler? Because apparently that filtered through, you know, the bomb plot.
Yeah, well, I didn't know anything at all about that until I got back.
So the Germans wouldn't confide, they wouldn't actually talk about anything?
I suppose if they could have spoke German fluently, they could have had a good chat with them, shortly because they're already super lads like this atmosphere, you know, and they probably had a belly full of the war anyway, and that, and they're probably typical British Army, boring all the time with you. They're boring as well about different things.
Did you get
any British talk you didn't bore the park?
Did you get any kind of treats from the jet, you know, like at Christmas or anything? Did they do anything special at any point in the time you were in Germany? You know, anything you
thought? They must have done something at Christmas time, but like I said, the one Christmas I got was a cup of sweet tea. I can't think what some of the guys were quite okay.
Yeah. But they didn't have anything like, you know, a trip to the cinema or something like that. I mean, other prisoners of war, they got one trip to the cinema, apparently.
No.
So there was nothing like that.
No, I was hoping they would get a chance to go to the cinema, but we got a, there's me and a couple of Welsh blokes in it, but I got away from this first in Germany, and there was a gate here to go out, and we come up this and went all the way around here to get the state again. It took us quite some time. When we got here, we just skipped the camp, as it were. This German settler come back with his girlfriend and spotted us and rolled us up and took us back inside again and pushed us around, but nothing special all that week. And that was it, we didn't get away any more than that. And,
did anybody think about escape in Germany, you know, like anybody make any proper plans or even carry them out over the 70, you know, the 70 men and then not?
I can't think of any in my outfit there.
Did you talk about it?
We've got away, some fellas got away about 3 days, we got brought back again.
Can you remember, can you tell us about that?
I don't know how far they got and things like that.
What were they trying to do, just to break them up?
You see, it's all right, you've got to be organised when you escape. You can't just, you had no clothes of any discipline. Only in the prison camps you see in the movies in their way. You used to make suits and things like that and get passports and so on. Like when you get the work camp, it's just like working in a local factory here, sort of thing. Like you just got what you stand up and nothing. You know, and there's no chance of borrowing a suit. It's this sort of probably no tattered battle dress or like that fella called Snakey with his funny hat and big long coat and things like that. So you had any escape clothes at all, really. They had that more in the prison camp rather than the working camp, I should think.
But the people that did get away for the 3 days, did they? What stories did they come back with? Or did they come back? Were they allowed to come back, or were they sent somewhere else?
As you say, that's a someone got sent somewhere else. And I think as far as I know, they're okay. You know, but it was a bit of a sting there for the German commandant, if anybody escaped and all that. You know.
What do you remember about him?
Well. That's the one I was telling about when I talked about Nick's essence sort of thing. I think he was a nice bloke, he was. He wasn't cut out to be a soldier, that you could tell. He was just a family sort of man. Like. But this one that said he was a bit nasty. And one that wasn't very great at talking about the same, all the foreign language and all that. So when he escaped, he wouldn't give himself up. But, you know.
What about the one that was nasty? In what ways was he nasty?
Well, he said he pick up the blokes and all that and push them around and things like that, you know, and knock their tins over and things like that, you know. And you couldn't say a great deal about it. Kind of thing of things that's happened.
Just going back a little bit, I mean, we talked about Pike on the DLI photograph, on the battalion photograph, this is going back to Italy. And I think you told us off the tape about the news that he was going to be repatriated. Could you just talk a little bit about that? Well, that'll have been in Italy, but because apparently
that was you've known him.
Well, he lost his arm.
He sort of were damn glad he was going to go away at the same time. You sort of resent the fact that he was going home, you're going to still be stuck here, sort of thing. Which I thought was an untrustful thought to have about your head and that, you know. But you immediately thought about your mum, your dad, your brothers and sisters, and your pals and all that, and back there. Because another thing is to stand in my mind, especially when I was in Germany, when you just stood outside there looking, and you could see the moon, and that moon, yeah, standing at, shining so huge, the same moon, and all that sort of thing, like that, and was shining that, you know. And that guy who used to say the Lord's Prayer every time at 10 o'clock, then he just got married. I wonder what happened to him and all that. Of course, the time was different, but he was saying that it was different time in South, whatever he lived in that, I don't know.
What about the British bombers, the British bombing campaign? Were you affected by that at all?
The British?
The British, you know, the British bombers at night, you know, the night, were they,
well, I
were they troubled at all? Were they any trouble?
No, I don't think I could brought back, but there was one plane got shot down somewhere, one of our planes. And they brought the body back to the working camp I was at. And they brought it back in a sack, as it were. And of course, the dogs that they had was running in this, where they had put them there, it was kind of a shed like that. And then because we'd have to go to the body, see. Well, it was decided then to build a coffin for the put him in. So quite a number of us had to take a strip of our bed, put a big a wooden coffin, which you'd imagine was quite heavy. Although there was nothing of the body left, there was just probably a few bones and things like that. And it was quite heavy. So they had to get four pallbearers to carry the coffin. And we're being told, it took me. But when you have these epaulets on your shoulder, there's a button there, passing it, you know, doing the foot, just weapon through and all that, you know. And we were carrying this coffin. And of course, the weight of the coffin's pressing on this button here. And you, when you've got the coffin, to move the button like this and all that, you know. And you get, after it's been on their shoulder for quite some time, you get excruciating pain there and all that. And we carried this coffin, must have took this way to get buried. But they had to break the bed so far to make a coffin for him. And I never did find out who he was. Like, it was one of our pilots. And
was he British or American?
British or American, I think.
Was it so, yeah.
Father and all, like, you know. But I thought the sad part about it, like, not only was he killed and all that, the dog was eating his body and all that, and we had to go to carry him and give him a decent burial. But the judge was okay about that, he didn't mind, you know.
Now, just moving us back to Falkenberg and the work camp, when you marched off with the Germans, were the German civilians moving west as well?
Well, there was a sort of mass heaving of people, I said, walking here and walking there. There was women walking this way, men walking that way, and they're all sort of one was going left, one was going right, and we just passed them. So well, there were actually people that was living in the Falkenberg at the time, that I don't know what happened to them.
Did the work routine continue until you left? Or was the railway yard still functioning?
Well, I should think the railway was still there, but we just walked away and put it all behind.
But it was still going till the day you left, kind of thing.
I was here, so
it was never actually properly demolished.
Oh, no, I will.
Matter
of fact, if you can find out where Falkenberg is, and what sort of town it is and all that, so I think how sad it is, like, I wouldn't know. Because we just marched from there and marched back again. It's like you come from Hartford to Welling Garden City, you don't know anything at all about it. You pretty much the same as well. We just used to get marched backwards and forwards.
So you never managed to get out, apart from your pinching expeditions where you were?
No. I did hope to get to the cinema one time, but never did get to the cinema.
So you found out where it was?
I must have walked past it. The tote was there.
When you were working in Germany, were you ever allowed any kind of freedom at all, or was there always a guard with you at all times? Or?
Well, you had a certain amount of freedom, because I remember there were some bricklayers working there, and I was a bricklayer, and of course they had walked away and left their work, and I went and got myself a trowel or something like that, and I tied it in with a point and all that, and looked back and thought, that's great, that looks quite well. It did. And of course, the bricklayers wouldn't do a good job, and they probably couldn't do a good job. When they come back and sort the script, no, not again, they were dug rough and that. But I thought myself there, yeah, you know, could get a job doing that, would be certainly not the ground, that, you know.
Now, but when you go back to when you were sent to the work camp, did the Germans make any inquiries about your trade, you know, the
specialisation? No, not that I'm aware of.
So when you were going to the, you wouldn't have had a clue that you were going to work on a railway, could have been working anywhere.
No, you didn't know what to discuss. You went as a group, and you got the railway.
Now, in later years, were you able to piece together what happened to the men that you were taken prisoner with, and
you see, only you, the people that you're with at the time, you don't know who was around, you don't know who got killed, you don't know who got posted. Some people got posted near Poland and things like that, I suppose, not different parts of Germany. And your dad went to Torgau 4B. It could have been about 5 miles away, or less than that, from where I was, in my window. And there was the other guys that was there saying, Chops would probably do quite well.
When you got to the airfield, did you run into anybody that you knew from previous times?
No.
So, you were with the Americans, you were on the plane.
In the belly of the plane, I've never been on an airplane.
You've never been on a plane before?
Never ever been to play.
So what was that experience like? Were you scared of that?
I couldn't see a damn thing, but when I got the chance to go in the front where the front gate was to see England and all that, and the channels were going over, I couldn't, great and all that. And when I thought to myself, do you know what? I thought to myself, you get high above the clouds, you got the impression then, being such a silly ignorant sort of bloke, you could get up and walk through deep snow and things like that. It's obviously ridiculous. But I never got to fly the plane again till I lost my wife when she died there all these years ago, 5 or 6 years ago. And my son says, this happened last night. He says, Dad, you and I will go away for the weekend to Dublin. And that, you know, he says, well, I never been to Ireland. I never meet in Scotland. Still haven't been to Scotland. And I went to Dublin and had it on the aircraft. And I wasn't a bit scared, you know, a bit apprehensive when I first went, okay. And of course, since then, I flew to Newcastle, because you could fly to Newcastle in 40 minutes or something like that from Stansted. But of course, it doesn't work that way, because you go from Wellington City to Stansted, and wait there till you get on the plane. When you get off the plane, you've got the, you know. Well, I had met a mate, this Hodge, my best man, he was waiting in the castle there for me, the airship, or the airport, you know. And, of course, the plane I was going to get had been delayed for about 40 minutes and things like that. And going on these cheap short flights, me having long legs and going up, I was sort of pinned in, I couldn't get out there. When I had the plug, I had the lock there, I was damn glad to get off it.
It was as bad as your flight.
He was waiting for me that night. Where the hell have you been for all that, you know? So, fortunately, the airport is on the metro. You probably know that, there. And I didn't know that, because he was the one that taught me. So he just got in the metro and took the flight down to Socius. And then we got there, and he says, hang on, he said, I'll get a taxi to take us to his house, you know, which we did.
Now, going back to 1945, you're on the plane, you get back to England. What was how was things set up there? What was the British authorities' reception for you?
Well, you know what, they didn't know what sort of guy you were, what you had gone through. So, when it was Americans, they got inoculated, right, in case you had any disease or like that. Before we left them again, you got inoculated again. So when you arrived in England, they wouldn't know where the fact that I'd been knocked, they wouldn't take a word for it, so they get some more inoculations. And before you left there to go back home, they got some more. So like a pincushion, I suppose, really. And that gets back to I think I told the story about this Gregory, who was before the war, before I went abroad, I don't know. But standing there in front of him, I remember standing in front of me, like, and he got in deck, because the guys, you get a bit of swab, do your arm, and the guy was sitting there, then, and Greg was stood there like that, and the guy swabbed it, and the guy stood there, and Greg was stood there like that. Another guy, same guy, but all the guys saw was the arm, he did the inoculation and all that. And the third thing he got, I said, "Hey, Greg," and he went straight over flat like that. And got three. And I'd be all right, just drank from one side and carried on to somewhere else. But that wasn't going to matter, not really. Even when I went back, having been on leave and all that, I'd still get more inoculation when I went back.
So,
when I went back to be a Argyle and Southern Headless, I was saying the Southern for a couple of days or something.
Oh, we'll talk about that, but just getting back to you, you were in England. How did the authorities, the inoculated you, what else did they do, and what was the setup? You got off the plane at the airfield. What did they do with all of these prisoners?
Must have got demobbed at that time. Didn't I get demobbed at that time? No, it wasn't Australia. I wasn't going to go demobbed, no.
But did they have an interrogation? I mean, did they quiz you about, you know, what unit you were with when you were captured?
Asked you sort of a fingernail sketch of what happened and things like that. And you just talk the best of anybody. You see, I reckon everybody I've done would probably tell the same. We're a bit sort of a barbed wire happy, like you hadn't been in touch with the outside world much since and that, you know. So you were a different wavelength.
How did that affect the way you...
Well, when I first got back home, I took some time to get rehabilitated, I think. Not an awful long time. But I remember when I was walking home from the station, apparently a few chaps had been back from the war long before I did, so I was one of the later ones that was coming home. And somebody must have told my dad that I was on my way back up the road. My dad come run down the street to see me, and I had my kit bag and all that, and he put his arm on me and gave me a big hug. Well, people didn't do that, their sons up north at that time. But to get a hug by your dad was really something. And I thought, you know, I thought it was really nice and things like that. Of course, a day's old hack, getting a hug of your pension and things like that. And I was really pleased about that. And then while I was there crying and all that, and did a big fuss of me and things like that. And I was okay, and then I was going to the bedroom, just sitting in the bedroom on my own, quiet and all that. It took a while before I sort of come back. I said, go out for a pint. And I went to the pub, and of course my mates were still in, had come back from the war. And I was going to the pub, a complete stranger, nobody that I knew was around. And I'd buy a pint, and I'd take it, and I'd leave the pint and go back into the pub and all that, and just walking on, till finally sort of the lads would come back off leave and things, you got that, meeting more guys, and you got that sort of thing. Then I was trying to get back, I went to the place to try and get back in the army, but I had too much leave, I said. And they said, oh, you've got another 20 weeks or something. So I went back to work with my firm. And the firm was for the apprenticeship. Worked with them for a little while. And I went back in the army. And I went outside of the Summons. Somewhere sitting there, somewhere in Whitburn, somewhere like that. And then, and the Argyle and Southern Highlanders. Then by that time I sort of decided I ought to go and work the army catering corps because I'd been hungry and I wasn't going to be hungry again. And finish up with Aldershot and things like that.
Just moving back for this period on leave, you said you were restless when you got. So you've been in a prison camp, and then you were back home and you couldn't.
You couldn't, took a bit to get readjusted, didn't it? I mean, I haven't been in army barracks and been with men all the time and roughing it and, you know, getting rough this morning. Actually getting to a house, I suppose, as well, my thing was, you know, when people that loved you and big the fuss at you and glad to see you and couldn't do enough for you, it was a bit overwhelming and that, you know. And so it took me a little while before I got to be adjusted.
What about South Shield? You've been away for 3 years. Has that changed?
Then there was some girl who wrote me, and that my friend, my mother's and dad's, and they come from No Shields, and what's that they go wrong with her?